Committee, Bassiouni versus Central Intelligence Agency, Mr. Becker. Becker, where are you?
May it please the court. My name is Stephen Becker. I am representing the plaintiff appellant, Professor M. Sharif Bassiouni, in his case against the Central Intelligence Agency. I would like to address issue two, and if time permits, issue three. The CIA has described this.
I notice, in light of your opening, that you are withdrawing your first argument, which is that the district judge called him a gasp professor.
I'm not withdrawing the argument. I just thought that is very plain, and so I thought I would instead argue issue two and three. If you wish me to argue issue one, I would be happy to.
No.
Okay. The CIA has called this an unusual situation. I would agree with them. This case presents an issue of first impression in the country, namely where the CIA waives its right to assert a Glomer response. May it instead...
I must say, you know, when Judge Rundle said this was semantics, I think he hit the nail on the head. The fact is they don't want to indicate the number of documents or what they contain. And that's their privilege. And the fact they don't want to call it Glomer, they want to call it no number, no. Why they do that, I have absolutely no idea. It's all just, it doesn't matter. They can't deny that there are any documents that have ever mentioned your client because they'd revealed that years ago. But that's, you know, they want to stop there. They don't want to tell you anything more. Well, that's their privilege. Whether you call it Glomer, call it no number, no list, call it anything you want.
It's not their privilege, Your Honor.
Well, of course it is, because look, what they say, which it seems perfectly sensible, is that if they tell you that, you know, there are 100,000 documents that mention Bassiouni, and then they start to give you a catalog of what they are, then the enemies of the United States who you know, love the Freedom of Information Act, they may be able to draw inferences. Why is Bassiouni of such great interest to the CIA and this and that and the other thing? And where'd they get all that information? How could they get 100,000 documents? They must do this surveillance, that, and so on. So the same arguments that lie behind to justify the Glomar response justify this similar response in a situation where it can't be pure Glomar because they had earlier disclosed that they had some documents. As far as the policy, the reasoning goes, there's absolutely no difference.
There is a large difference, Your Honor. A Glomar response concerns the ability to either confirm or deny the existence of records.
What's the practical difference?
The practical difference is it denies my client the opportunity to challenge the CIA's claimed exemptions.
Well, of course, but that would be the same thing if there had never been this spilling of the beans many years ago about a few documents that they'd gotten from the State Department.
Your Honor, that's the CIA's problem. That's not my client's
problem. Why is it a problem? The point is why should the fact that they revealed some information, which is quite harmless because it's just some stuff they got from the State Department, why should that require them to compromise, you know, national security by providing additional information?
Your Honor, this is not a case.
But if they hadn't revealed those State Department documents, they wouldn't have to reveal anything.
The question is, this is not a case about national security. That's the shibboleth that the CIA is throwing up to the court. This is a question about the proper procedure to take place in a FOIA and a Privacy Act case where the CIA waives its Glomar response.
Waives its response. That's so ridiculous. The CIA takes a very, you know, legalistic, narrow notion of what Glomar meant. And somehow Glomar is supposed to mean that their lips are completely sealed. Now, if the lips are slightly unsealed, why is that a waiver of anything?
Well, Your Honor, you might analogize it to Epimetheus' famous bride,
Pandora.
I don't want an analogy. Well, Your Honor,
I want a practical reason. If they're entitled to make a Glomar response, it's because there's been some judgment that even revealing the existence of documents without revealing their contents can compromise security. If that's true, it's equally true here, even though they had revealed the fact that they had received some stuff from the State Department many years ago.
I disagree. It is not equally true because there
is... Why isn't it equally true?
Because there is no authority in the law for a no-number, no-list response.
Why isn't the danger to national security, forget about the legalities, why isn't the danger to national security equally great, notwithstanding their having revealed the receipt of these documents from the State Department?
The reason is because the CIA is an agency under FOIA and the Privacy Act like any other agency.
You're not answering my question. Now, if you can retreat to legalisms, but I'm asking a practical question, which is how is the security interest of the United States, whether you think it's trivial or great, how is it different simply because, how is it less? How is there a lesser interest simply because they revealed the receipt of those documents from the State Department?
It is not a lesser interest. We are not arguing that the...
Fine. Okay, great. You answered my question. Now you can make your legal argument.
Your Honor, here, the difference is we are not saying that the CIA does not have a right to assert its claimed exemptions, to claim that the information may be classified. What we're saying is the CIA...
Not limited to classified.
Well, it may not be, but what we're saying is my client has a right to have a meaningful opportunity to challenge the CIA's claimed exemptions.
But he would have. But suppose suppose the CIA had never revealed the receipt of these documents from the State Department. Then you would concede Glomar would be in full force, and then your client would still have absolutely no right to find out anything,
right? If the CIA had originally asserted a Glomar response, that's right, then we wouldn't be here in this court.
So why should the fact that they reveal... I mean, if you think of this in practical terms, your entire handle for, you know, removing the mask of the CIA is that they revealed having received a few documents, or maybe many documents, I guess 50 documents or so, from the State Department. Now, why should that affect your client's rights to find out what the CIA has?
Well, that's not what affects my client's rights. What affects my client's rights is the fact that the CIA said that they were holding records on him. The fact that they did that and they exposed that, that now forces them to have
why?
To comply
why
because they are an agency under the statute.
But why?
Because they are an agency under the statute.
What does that have to do with it? Anyway?
Because Congress said they're an agency under the statute, and
I must say I don't understand that at all. That's equally true in the Glomar case. The CIA is an agency.
Right.
The logical basis of Glomar, is that the process of revealing what documents there are and pawing through them may tip intelligence information. Right. The question my colleague is asking, and which I'm asking, is why isn't that equally true if the CIA says, deliberately or by accident, we hold at least one document with the plaintiff's name in it? That the basis of Glomar, which is that going through the process of revealing what they are and separating wheat from chaff can tip in intelligence information, is true whether or not the CIA first says we hold at least one document. Is it not?
No, it's not true. They are given that opportunity, but here they waive that opportunity. They concede that.
Look, what is it about having said we hold one document with the plaintiff's name in it that makes the process of identifying all of them and then claiming formal exemptions under the FOIA less threatening to national security than if the CIA initially said, we won't tell you whether there is one such document?
Why is it less serious to national security?
Yeah.
Because there's a thing called the FOIA and the Privacy Act, and they have to comply with that.
That doesn't distinguish the two.
Your Honors, there is no legal authority for the no-number, no-list response.
Why is there any greater authority for a Glomar response?
I understand your argument that Glomar is wrong and the CIA could never make such a claim, but you're not making that argument, and that leads to the question, what is the difference between the case where the CIA says, we won't tell you if there is even one document, and the case where the CIA says, yes, there is one document, and that's all we will tell you?
Because once the CIA says we have one document and notifies us of that fact, then they become subject to the provisions of Congress under FOIA and the Privacy Act.
They are subject to the FOIA and the Privacy Act, whether they acknowledge it or not.
But once they acknowledge it, they have to allow my client.
Why do they have to?
Because
where do you find that in the law?
Because it's in the
where do you find it?
Vaughn versus Rosen. It's been the law for 30 years. Vaughn versus Rosen.
No, but you agree Vaughn. They didn't have an obligation to give, would not have an obligation to give them a Vaughn index if they hadn't revealed.
Right, but they did reveal it.
But why is that so important? Where in the statute does it say, or anywhere does it say, if they reveal, you know, that they have anything, then they have to disclose everything? Where does it say that?
Well, that's what the courts have said in Vaughn, is once an agency becomes subject to the provisions of FOIA.
No. The agency is subject. That's what Judge Easterbrook said.
And what I'm saying is they're not complying with FOIA.
Yes, but what is it in the law that says that their duty of disclosure arises when they reveal that they have a document, that they can't, what is it that says they can't stop there? It says we have one document, that's all we're going to tell you.
What it says is they can't stop there is because, like my client, he's a plaintiff, he has a right to meaningful challenge the claimed exemptions.
No, but he wouldn't have that if they hadn't disclosed the document. He wouldn't have any right.
That's true, he wouldn't have that right, but they did disclose.
You don't have a practical reason. You don't have a practical reason, and you don't have any statutory language or anything else to point.
No, what I'm saying is the CIA has no statutory language. We cited in our brief the executive order.
But you acknowledged Glomar, right?
Certainly.
Is there some reason why you don't challenge Glomar?
No, I mean, Glomar is a legitimate claim of the CIA.
Then why is no number, no list?
Yeah. Because there's no authority for it.
There's no authority for Glomar.
Yes, there is. The courts have said. There's an executive order.
Court. Now we'll say no number, no list is fine. And no number, no list is perfectly consistent with the executive order.
And I say
next week people will be citing the Bassiouni Doctrine and they'll have forgotten about Glomar. And all that will happen is that Professor Bassiouni's name will be attached to a big anti-FOIA and anti-privacy doctrine.
No, the problem is Professor Bassiouni will never have the chance to challenge the documents that the CIA has that they admit that they have on him. It's his right as a plaintiff.
That would be true of anyone who is hit with Glomar. He'd have no right to challenge the documents.
But here he wasn't hit with Glomar. And what I'm saying,
why do you think Glomar is the extent of the agency's rights under the executive order?
Because that's what the executive order says.
No, the executive order doesn't say that.
Yes, the executive order says.
Let's look at the executive order. The executive order says they don't have to reveal stuff that's classified or that might reveal methods or techniques of.
The executive order says that an agency may refuse to confirm or deny the existence or non-existence of requested information whenever the fact of its existence or non-existence is itself classified.
It doesn't stop with itself classified.
Under this order. Yes.
Or revealing of intelligence sources and methods.
Right.
That are protected.
That's right, and that is the Glomar response.
And that's the
response.
Base of Glomar. Why isn't it equally the basis? They say that if they tell you all the documents they have about Bassiouni, they'll be revealed. There's a danger. It just has to be a danger. Revealing of intelligence sources and methods. That's the justification of no number, no list. Why isn't it the same as...
That's not the justification.
As strong as for Glomar.
That's not the justification
for
no number, no list.
Well, it's the justification for Glomar, right?
That's the justification for
Glomar. Why doesn't it justify this?
Because the no number, no list, they are trying to interject that.
Right. They're trying. That's a further implication, they argue, of this. Why is it an unreasoned extension of Glomar?
Because it's not in the executive order.
But
it's not in their implementing
isn't
regulations.
In the executive order.
It is.
Look
that,
at it.
That is the Glomar response right there. Everyone universally recognizes that is the Glomar response, to neither confirm nor deny the existence or non-existence of records. That's not what a no number, no list response is.
No, they're denying the existence or non-existence of any responsive records.
They are not. They have already conceded that they have responsive records.
Yes, but that's not what Mr. Bassiouni wants.
He wants
new responsive records.
No, he wants the ability to challenge the CIA's claimed exemptions. because these things could obviously adversely affect him and affect his career. That's why the CIA is required to produce a Vaughn Index. That's why the courts 30 years ago said that plaintiffs have a right to meaningfully challenge the agency's claimed exemptions. The no-list response is a prophylactic attempt by the CIA to prohibit my client from having any meaningful
testing. You're saying is equally true about the Glomar response, and that's why I don't understand why, given your perspective, you accept the validity of the Glomar response. You have obviously not risen to the bait, which I have dangled in front of you several times. Maybe too late in this litigation anyway to challenge the Glomar response itself.
Now, I'm not challenging the Glomar response. I'm saying the CIA has no authority to interpose a no-number, no-list response. It is nowhere listed in the executive order, and it is nowhere listed in their implementing regulations, and therefore they have no authority. This is something they've made out of thin air in order to preclude my client from challenging his exemptions, and I say they have no authority whatsoever to do it. Thank you, Your Honor. I say my time is over.
Thank you. Ms. Grove?
May it please the court. My name is Tara Lee Grove, and I represent the Central Intelligence Agency. The CIA properly exercised its authority to protect its intelligence activities by invoking exemptions under the Freedom of Information Act and the Privacy Act in response to plaintiff Professor Bassiouni's request for information.
The thing that I find troublesome, although it didn't come up in Professor Becker's argument, is this First Amendment business, right? So he's claiming that if there are First Amendment materials that you're not allowed to keep. And I don't understand the basis on which the district judge dismissed that.
The district court found
that finally, we actually have a complaint, which is notice pleading, more or less. Notice pleading, in which Professor Becker says, plaintiff has a statutory rights to the records he seeks, and such agency records are being improperly withheld from him. Now, why isn't that sufficient? Why does he have to mention the First Amendment, E7?
Well, there are two reasons, Your Honor. First of all courts have recognized so far that an E7 claim is a separate claim. But more importantly, the statute...
I don't buy that. You make a request for documents, and you may have a zillion different statutory, constitutional, what-have-you theories as to why you're entitled to those documents. You don't have to list them. You don't have to list sections of the statute separately.
But more importantly, the E7 claim
That's a bad ground.
The E7...
What's your good ground?
E7 claim is a maintenance claim. An agency shall not maintain records pertaining to an individual's First Amendment activities unless that is pursuant to the scope of a law enforcement activity. There is no indication that a plaintiff necessarily has a right to access to records that pertain to his First Amendment activities. Professor Bassiouni did not bring a maintenance claim in any part of his complaint, and therefore did not put the CIA on notice that he had a maintenance claim pertaining to his First Amendment activities.
In other words, your view is that he has never asked the CIA to purge particular documents from its files.
That's correct. And therefore his complaint did not.
Well, how are these claims enforced? I mean, how do you... Maybe they're not enforceable, but how would you... If you're correct that there's no production requirement, just a purging requirement, then how are these things litigated?
Well, this case presents a possible way that they might be litigated. In this case, Professor Bassiouni, not at the complaint stage, but rather in response to the CIA's motion for summary judgment, stated that the FBI told him that the FBI had collected information relating to his First Amendment activities and shared that information with the CIA. Now, we do not necessarily say that that would be enough to withstand a motion for summary judgment, but it might possibly, under certain circumstances, state a claim and survive a Rule 12b-6 motion. And therefore, whether or not the CIA tells a particular plaintiff anything, the plaintiff may learn information from other sources. But again, Professor Bassiouni did not assert that claim in his complaint, and as the district court found, He could not assert it later on in response to a motion for summary judgment. Moreover, Professor Bastianini chose not to amend his complaint after he claims he gathered more information.
You don't have to plead law. This business about amending the complaint is just the same as your argument that the complaint was defective to start with. It presumes that complaints have to plead legal theories, which they don't.
There had to be something in the complaint that would tell the CIA, put the CIA on notice, that Professor Bastianini was alleging that the CIA was maintaining records pertaining to his First Amendment activities. And there was nothing in the complaint that would put the CIA on notice that Professor Bastianini was bringing such a claim. He could have easily added such a provision to his complaint or asked the district court for permission to amend his complaint later on in the litigation. One can do that after discovery has gone through, even after one party has filed a motion for summary judgment. If the court has no further questions, the CIA would ask that the court affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. So, Mr. Professor, so your time expired, but if you'd like another minute, you can have it to respond to, about the First Amendment issue.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. Contrary to the claims of opposing counsel, we did state a First Amendment claim, though, we are not required to, in the complaint. Exhibit B to the complaint clearly set forth the precise claim which Professor Bastianini set forth in his opposition to the summary judgment motion in his affidavit. And clearly, under Rule 10C, exhibits are, for all purposes, part of the complaint.
So you're asking for purgation or for the return of these First Amendment materials?
Well, at this point, we are simply... We don't know what the materials are.
No, I understand, but what do you want done with them?
Well, first of all, we want to use it to prevent the applicability of certain exemptions, and then we would, of course, move to have them expunged, just like this court did in the Becker case a decade ago.
Did you ask for that remedy in the complaint?
No, because in the complaint stage, we don't know what the documents are. This is something which occurred...
You see, the problem with using this to get the documents is that anybody who wants to avoid Lomar would just then say, and they're trampling my First Amendment rights, and we won't know that they're not trampling my First Amendment rights till they've prepared a full Vaughan Index. And at that point, Lomar is a dead letter.
Well, if the CIA had appropriately asserted Lomar, then we would never be at this point.
When I say Lomar, I mean what will henceforth be known as the Bassiouni Doctrine.
Let me ask you another question.
Sure.
Now, did you request an opportunity to have an in-camera hearing at which the CIA would be required to explain in somewhat greater detail why it was responding the way it was?
No, we never got to that point. I did file a motion to compel the Vaughan Index, but no, the court simply granted summary judgment without us even getting to that point. So I had not yet had an opportunity to challenge the claimed exemptions.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And the court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.